Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Go live for real, real.
Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tire. E-Range EV tires are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tire with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetires.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tires.com to find your EV's next set of tires.
Hello and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for November the 25th, 2022. This is episode number 138. Happy Thanksgiving weekend for our US viewers. On today's show, we'll be talking about the reveal of the Fiat 500e Abarth. The Buick Electra E5 has been leaked, and Mercedes will offer a subscription for more power. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the stalwart Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And we also have Kyle Connor joining us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out-of-Spec Studios, where he produces high-voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. So welcome, everybody. Unfortunately, Martin, who is a regular co-host, could not be here today, so we're just going to wing it. And it's a Thanksgiving edition, so we're going to maybe keep it a little short today. We're going to keep it tight. So let's kick this thing off with some news and then get to what we've been driving this week. So Abarth is the performance sub-brand of Fiat, and it has declared that it is now more Abarth than Evrier. Basically, this is the first electric car for Abarth. So there's a lot of show here, but there's also a bit of go. I should probably bring up let me just bring this thing up. Yeah, and turn it on. And so we can see it in action. And you can actually hear it. And that's kind of a little bit what we just want to mention, that because this is an all electric car. But if you listen, there's some vroom vroomy sounds, right? So basically, this is video of the when they brought it on the stage for the premiere. We'll just leave it there, and alrighty. All right, so there's a lot of show here, but not also a bit of go. So the 500e Abarth gets 338 horsepower and 11 pound-feet of torque more than the large battery 500e. The 500e comes with two different battery sizes, but the large one is the one that gets compared to here. So all told, this one gets 155 horsepower and 162 pound-feet of torque. So this extra boost helps it zip up to 62 miles an hour in 7 seconds. That's 2 seconds faster than the non-Abarth. The Abarth 500e also gets a lot of appearance changes, more aggressive front and rear bumpers, larger side skirts, larger 18-inch wheels. So, let's see. I don't know. So this is coming to us in the 500e is coming to us here in 2024. And it's very likely that we're going to get the Abarth as well. So I don't know. Tom, have any thoughts about this? Like the 500e in general? Oh, we talked about it a bit last week, right? But
yeah, so I love little hot hatches, gas or electric. I own two CRX SIs back in the 80s. I put a nitrous kit on one of them. So, I love little hatchbacks that are fast. That would be my preference as a daily driver, to be honest with you. I love my BMW i3. I thought it was an awesome daily driver. It should have had more range. When they came out with the bigger batteries, it made it so much more useful. And then the i3S, which I had, I'd love something like this as a daily driver. I'd pick one of these up. I think it'll be great.
Right on. Kyle, you have any thoughts on Abarth?
Yeah, well, sort of echoing Tom, big fan of hot hatches. I can't help but feeling that there was more they could have done to this. You know, when we talk about combustion world, when we look at the last Abarth, when we had the multi-air engine that sounded incredible, not big performance numbers on paper, but this is more about experience than outright acceleration. That was an entirely different engine, an entirely different transmission, a different suspension and braking setup. I feel like we haven't seen an automaker yet take their EV to that level. They're definitely using just the existing hardware that's in the 500E and slapping a performance tune on it. It's not much more power, 34 horsepower. I mean, that's a significant bump, but not enough to gain 2 seconds 0 to 60. So what that tells me is they're changing the entire power curve of the system as well, allowing probably more output earlier on. I've spent quite a bit of time driving this generation of 500E, charging it, road tripping it, ripping it down back roads. I haven't fallen in love with it, especially when parked next to a Mini Cooper SE. I thought the Cooper SE was a more premium product, more fun, in my opinion. But the Abarth, or I should say the 500E, has more range. It's actually a usable car, faster charging. And I think it's going to fill a sweet spot here in America that we really need. I don't know all of the technical changes they've made to chassis braking improvements with the Abarth, but if they go all the way, which I really hope they do, this could really be, you know, the start of something exciting. I really think Volkswagen's answer to this has to be the ID3R, because that is just something, a great chassis that is totally held back by its supporting hardware. All they need to do is put all the Golf R stuff on an ID3, and that would be the ultimate hot hatch, in my opinion.
Right on. So price-wise, do we know what the price of the 500E is compared, with the Mini Cooper SE?
Well, we don't have American pricing for the car at all. In Europe, it's a bit more with the big battery than Cooper SE, but it's a lot more car on paper. It's bigger. Last episode, we talked about that third door option that I'd never heard of before. So it's definitely a more substantial car, but you can, in terms of size, but in terms of build quality, at least the one that I spent time with was rattly and plasticky, and maybe it wasn't the right spec, but I just didn't really fall in love with that package as much as I have with ID3 or Mini Cooper SE.
Very interesting. It does have a bit more range, but yeah, I think it's the Mini Cooper SE is like, people love it so much. And like on our Inside EVs forum, we have like a large owners group there, and there's, you know, very enthusiastic about it, but man, it's just some more kilowatt hours. We need a bigger battery.
Basically. Yeah, bigger battery or more power. I just think, like, you know, for this Abarth version, like, slap another motor on the back. Let's see something crazy. Electric allows for crazy things at relatively low cost compared with a combustion car. So, I don't know. I'd like to see someone just go all out with one of these small cars.
Right. All right. In the spirit of keeping it tight, let's move along. The Mercedes-Benz... is going to offer a subscription for $1,200 a year. Owners of the EQE and EQS sedans and SUVs can get acceleration increase, which unlocks 20 to 24% more power. So this means the EQS 450 4MATIC sedan can now do 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds rather than 5.3. The EQE 350 4MATIC sedan gets, with acceleration increase, can now scoot to 60 in 5.1 seconds instead of 6 seconds. So, now personally, I kind of hate this, but maybe one of you can explain to our audience how Mercedes can do this without upsetting owners. Tom, you want to go first?
Well, if you don't pay for something, you don't get it, and you shouldn't be upset. I think that we're going to see a lot of this moving forward, the subscription service end for all cars, where, you know, it costs so much less for an automaker to make one standard version. And if they can unlock different features through software subscriptions, they could make like all of the cars have, you know, rolling out of the factory, be able to put out the most power, to have all the options. doesn't cost them that much more to just include everything, especially if they could just make one version of a car and just not have to change anything. That saves so much money. And then, you know, Dominic, let's say you can only afford the base version. Then you pay your $499 a month and get the base version with 250 horsepower, and, you know, you don't get power seats, like all this stuff. But then, you know, you decide later on, oh, I just got a raise. Inside AVs just bumped me up a little bit. I can afford another $250 a month. And now they unlock another 150 horsepower. They give you your power seats. If they can control all this stuff remotely and sell it to you, I think this is the direction that we're going to go in auto manufacturing, to be honest with you.
Right.
And I'm not against it.
Okay. Kyle?
So Marquez Brownlee tweeted about this, and I'm a huge Marquez fan. And he said, you know, microtransactions are ruining the interaction of human and brand, something a lot around there. And, you know, it just kind of feels like we have to pay for every little thing that we're getting. The thing is, Tesla does this. They offer an acceleration boost, $2,000, but it sticks with the car. This is a yearly upgrade. I think the timing situation, I'm not a fan of this subscription. However, let's talk about what you're actually getting here. Normally, I recommend against going for spending money for more performance in an electric car. Most of them are pretty quick. You really get used to the power quite quickly. For example, when I drive my Model 3 Performance, that starts to feel slow. Then I get in the Plaid and I'm like, whoa. And then that starts to feel slow. And where do you go from there? I mean, it's just you get used to the power level. Even today, I got in my smart car just to run over to Starbucks before this. And I was like, wow, this is quick. And it's only 60 kilowatts. And that's because I've been driving my old Range Rover. I mean, everything is relative. The thing is, when I was driving the EQE 350 4MATIC, I had that exact car on loan. It was the only EV I think I've ever reviewed where I'm like, maybe you need to bump the power up, because it was actually too slow for what the car stood for. Right. And so I'm glad they offer an upgrade. I wish it stuck with the car. I think this is going to be hard in the used market to control, but the automakers, specifically the German automakers, really want to have more touch points with their consumers after sale. They really want to be involved. They're trying to build these lifestyle brands. They're trying to connect with their owners and offer more features. The problem is they're going about it in the most German way possible, which isn't really working, I think, for the end user. You'll have a few guys that own these cars. It's like $1,200. They don't even think about it. They'll just throw it on the car and it'll be faster. But those typically are the AMG customers, not the 450 or 350 customers. I don't see this being a big revenue stream for them. It's more a, I think, showcase of their technical capability of unlocking power. To them, this is like the craziest thing. And it probably took 50 board meetings to announce this. But, you know, I wish my only critique would be great that they offer it. I do think the cars need it. Just wish it stuck with the car rather than subscription.
So I hate this personally. So I think if I was a Mercedes customer, I would want to pay the full price up front and get that performance right out of the box. Like I feel like this is just like just kind of teasing money out of me over a period of time. You know, like you already have service, you know, appointments and everything where you can squeeze me for, you know, air cabin filters or whatever, you know, which I, you know, cars need. But it, you know, it's also an opportunity for automakers to make a little bit of extra cash, or for their dealers to make a little bit of extra cash.
I don't think the dealer's involved with this at all. I think this is straight automaker revenue stream.
Right.
Honestly, yeah. I agree. I mean, I think if they offered this as a package that you could buy the car with, that would lead to a better customer experience.
But Dom, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What's the difference? Like, let's say the 250 horsepower version of the car is $55,000 and the 500 version of the car is, you know, $62,000. What's the difference if you check that box when you buy it, or if you buy the lower version ahead of time because maybe you can't afford it right now, and then a year down the road you say, oh, you know what, I can afford it, let me add this? Like, you're paying it either way. Like, I don't understand. I like this. I'm not against it, you know, and as long as it doesn't mean that in the end we pay more, which I know everybody is going to say, oh, of course we're going to pay more. That's why they're doing this. That doesn't necessarily make it true. You know, if it means that the lower cost, initial cost of the vehicle gets more people in it, and if the, those some of those people then can't afford to upgrade down the future, but they're still in the car for less money, then it's not a bad thing.
Interesting, Nebula 1701 points. So if you look at the fine print for that subscription service for the increased power, it says it isn't available for select nations as it isn't legal.
Yes, a lot of nations, and I actually think Germany might be one of them, is sort of cracking down on this excessive payment situation where it's like, oh, you want headlights? You want to drive your car at night? We're going to need 10 euros. Right. You know, there has to be a fine line. It's very much a gray area. And at some point, it's almost like we just need to make sure that safety is included, in my opinion. Any safety features are not, you know, able to be charged for. Car has everything that's physically installed. And then for extras, heated seats, sure. I mean, yeah, I guess as long as it's not a subscription and it sticks with the car, it's fine with me.
I just want to warn everybody, whether you like it or not, you're going to get it. This is coming. I've had a lot of conversations with product planners from multiple companies down the road. And guys, this is coming, and I'm trying to do my best to defend it. And there always has to be an opposing opinion here. But, you know, I think that this is going to be the future. It's going to kind of be like how years ago when it was first announced that you'd pay per view and you'd buy, you know, movies on TV, you know, and you know, that not everybody liked that idea. And, right. And you know, it was able to, you know, the market made some services work and some not. And, you know, I think that's going to be, I really think it's the future, whether we initially like it or not. I think this is what we're going to see. If we could go 10 years in advance from today, I think it will be commonplace that there'll be subscription services for a lot of different features in your vehicle.
See, I'm with Manas Parita here in the comments, who says, if you pay one-time upgrade fee, it's fine, but I hate subscription as well. That's like you said, if you could unlock maybe down the road, like a year or two down the road, and your purchase extra power, but permanent, like for, you know, I'd rather pay, you know, $5,000 than, you know, $1,200 for 5 years or 4 years or whatever. How long are you going to own the car anyway? Man.
Sorry to disappoint you, Doug.
It's all right. So, like you say, but this is something that automakers, they are looking at this. And a lot of them, I've heard in different meetings, people, you know, say, you know, kind of allude to it, not really say outright that they're going to do it, but, you know, talking about, you know, the continuing relationship and then revenue streams, non-traditional revenue streams from cars. And, you know, I kind of
get ready for it. Tesla's charging it for FSD now, right? It's $200 a month, something like that.
All right. Yeah, right. That's true. But that's, yeah, I can understand, but that's, I don't know. I feel a little differently about the FSD package for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Same thing. You're paying for a function that you're going to use for a percentage of the time you're driving the car. Whatever that percentage is up to the user, but you're not going to use this full throttle thing more than 2% of the time, 1% of the time. The car, you know, this is past 75% throttle. That's all you're unlocking. Versus, I think FSD to me seems like, okay, I get lane changes. Now you get FSD beta, which that's a whole nother topic as to whether or not people should be using this, maybe we should talk about when we're driving. Because Alyssa,
we can talk about that in a bit. Yeah.
Went into an Uber that had it and it was really sketchy.
Larry Kuhn says Ford Blue Cruise is a subscription technically. Yeah. I guess it depends on the market, but I think, you know, unless buyers really sort of push back somehow, but I'm not even sure what kind of leverage buyers, like as a huge group, have, rather than, unless they could maybe push through legislation to make it kind of illegal for that kind of subscription thing. But I don't think if we can get lawmakers to bite on that. So it's just a matter of, so the only other way to, not have it, I guess, would be for some automakers to, you know, use not having subscriptions. We're giving you all the power out of the box. This is the price. This is what it is. Use that as a selling point, as a competitive selling point against other brands. So maybe other brands might think, if we're losing market share to somebody because of their the way they're marketing, you know, just like I was naysaying the subscription model thing. I don't know. Maybe that would, I don't know, turn the tide, but I think Tom, you're right. I think it was something that we're just going to have to see, and we're just going to have to accept it's going to happen. And you can decide whether you want, like in China, you have to pay an extra bit of money for a subscription if you want your rear wheels to turn a few more degrees, I think, on the Mercedes EQE and EQS products. Is that right, Kyle? Is it China?
Yeah, in almost every market but America.
Okay. All right. Europe too then.
Yep.
Right. So that's...
Yeah, subscriptions coming. Maybe we'll do a whole episode on it in the future.
Yeah, we haven't heard a lot of pushback about that then, like the rear wheel steering increase.
Mindset out of America is a little bit shifted, where these microtransactions don't bother people as much. A lot of people rent their homes, they lease their cars, or have their cars on payment plans. Where here in America, it's certainly a thing, but I feel like we're much more ownership focused. We want to own what we have. Right. At least I'm that way. It's like if I am buying a car, I don't want to lease it. I want that to be mine. I want to modify it. I want to do whatever I want with it. And that's my thinking. I don't like shared mobility for my own personal use. I think it works well for other things. In Europe, it's totally different. So it's mindset of region, I think.
So Maki Vlog had a good comment there. So it's just kind of echoing my sentiments a bit. So we need a Southwest Airlines in the car industry. No fees.
And that could be Southwest. No fees, but no seat assignment.
Right. I mean, yes. All right. Anything else we want to say about that?
Next.
All right. So in China, battery powered Buicks built on the Ultium platform will be called Electra, followed by a number from 1 to 9. This week, the Buick Electra E5 showed up on a Chinese government website. Now this particular car is to be built by the SAIC GM, what do you call conglomerate or the?
Well, it's a partnership over there.
Partnership, yeah. Thank you. But prototypes of the E5 have been spotted in Michigan, so there's a chance that we may be getting something very close to this here. The Chinese spec is likely to be quite different, of course, but in China at least, the E5 is supposed to come with a single motor that puts out 241 horsepower. At least we're not, no word on other performance metrics, but we did hear about that part. And then separately, besides this leak, so in China, when a new car comes on the market, before it hits the market, it ends up on this like government website, like a government military. Anyway, so we get to see a lot of what's coming down the road there. But so separately, Buick announced that it will introduce an Ultium-based 5-seat SUV in China this year, with sales starting in mid-2023, which, you know, we're pretty sure it is this. Oops. Sorry, I'm doing the setting. We don't have Martin here today, so I have to pull up these files, and he is so much better at it than I am. Just want to show you what this thing looks like so you can see. Yes, there we go.
Blazer, anyone?
Sorry?
I said Blazer, anyone?
Right. So Buick does well in China. It's GM's strongest brand there, but here in the U.S. it's a bit weak. Tom, we don't know that they'll use this exact fascia, but it's likely going to be pretty close, I think. I don't know. Is this enough to move the needle for Buick in the U.S.?
Probably not. You know, Buick's got a tough road in the U.S., but in China, they're extremely popular. You know, I couldn't believe how many Buicks I saw over there. And, you know, if you remember back when the financial crisis hit, the government was bailing out the automakers, and they wanted Buick to be one of the brands that GM chops. And the GM went, you know, in front of Congress and basically showed them their sales in China. They're like, it's the number one selling American car in China. So that saved the brand. They didn't have to kill Buick, because, you know, you don't want to, you know, we're talking about, we want to, you know, try to even out this trade deficit with China. And now you're going to cut the one brand that actually sells well in China. It goes back to when, you know, before China turned into a communist country, the leaders all drove Buicks. They loved the Buicks in the 40s and 50s, and it still has that that cachet in China. It's kind of like how we used to say, you know, it's the Cadillac of, or, you know, Cadillac was like the standard for luxury here in the 60s and 70s.
that's how they view Buick over there. A lot of people. So, well, they did for many years, but yeah, I mean, I think it looks okay. There's nothing wrong with it, Dom, but is that going to save, is that styling going to save the brand in the US? I don't think so. You know, Buick is struggling here. Their owner base is getting older and older. They're not recruiting younger buyers, and it's they have a tough go here in the US.
Right. Yeah. Kyle, what are your thoughts about this thing?
Not many. Makes sense.
Right.
As we imagined it would happen.
Does it have any visual appeal to you?
No.
No. It's kind of, maybe it's just the color.
So in general, the Chinese, I don't understand the Chinese market. I haven't spent time there. I need to immerse myself in culture. That is a whole nother, literally another planet to what we experience over here. And Tom has spent more time out of any of us there. And, you know, he understands that Buicks are popular. I see the numbers. I know they like them. But I wouldn't be surprised if we just never get this in the U.S. Buick's probably just done for the U.S., is my opinion. And it'll just remain an overseas brand. That's what I would do.
That's not, I don't disagree that that's not the worst business plan, like from a business standpoint, you know, if something's not working for you.
Well, they have products at the moment. They don't have one good Buick product. They're all old. Nothing's been refreshed in recent memory in the Buick lineup. I mean, Cadillac is really going to be our luxury brand here in America. Buick will take that place in China. It's just badge engineering at this point. And so it doesn't, you know, just like fit the product and design it to the market of intended use and spec the, you know, supporting components, but the main Ultium platform will remain the same. It's just the same formula we've seen since the 70s and 80s of all of these same platform vehicles with different badges on it. We're going into the new era of Ultium this way.
Right. And in the past, some of the performance of the different sub-brands of GM, you know, would be different. But now they're, you know, this is all Ultium-based stuff. So it's like the same motors, the same handling kind of characteristics, more or less. I mean, there'll be some tuning differences, but basically they're, you know, Chevy Blazer, you know, electric Blazer, could be very similar to like this, or I'm not sure size wise how this compares to the Blazer, but you know what I'm saying. They're going to be very much the same vehicle, just with different body panels and maybe different interior, just to appeal to a different crowd. So I don't know, and I don't know if they really need three brands to find all their niches, you know.
Well, let's maybe a topic for another day.
Right. So real quick, we don't really talk about this very long, but there was another thing. Well, I keep hitting the wrong buttons. In China, another vehicle that was shown there, and it's called the Chevrolet FNR XE. Let's see, make sure I got that right. General Motors just held its GM China Tech Day in Shanghai, where it announced plans to launch 15 vehicles by 2025. So to underline that announcement, it showed off the new vehicle called the Chevrolet FNR XE Concept, and you can see it on your screen here. There are rumors that a production model based on this will be announced for China next year. Kyle, this is Chevrolet's first all-electric sedan, and there are no hints that it will be sold here, but should it?
No.
Okay. You know, you're not liking this look.
It's not about the look. It's just like, look at sales number. People want SUVs, whether or not we can, you know, scream and cry about it. It's just you don't want to dilute your offering too much too early. And right now, it's easy to build hype when you have one or two products around those products. It's easy to convince people to go into it. I mean, Volkswagen, I think, really did this properly. They launched ID3, huge success. Then naturally, ID4, huge success right after that. What you really don't want to do is dump an entire model line on a market. It gets too fragmented, too confusing, too early. You'll have to work your way to that. So, you know, as much as there are certainly a buyer base for sedans in America, I really think they need to go hard into Equinox for our market, hard into Blazer, and just push those two product lines until there's, you know, outside desire for this. But sedans are dying, more or less.
Right. That's true. They're nearly as popular. But then there's been little hints that they're coming back to. It's been a while since I've really looked into the issue or looked at sales numbers exactly. But there were starting to come back a little bit, but I don't know how if that's trended upwards or if it's just like a flash in the pan. Tom, real quickly, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think it looks cool. I'm just, like you guys brought up, I'm concerned about how a sedan will be embraced here in the U.S., a whole new model. You know, we really aren't buying them anymore. And unless like you, I haven't dove into the numbers and really studied it. Unless it shows that the trend is reversing and that sedans are on the rise, I don't know why they'd want to bring a new vehicle, you know, into market, a whole new vehicle like that, when it appears that that category is not a category that people want to buy.
Right. All right. Well, I kind of like it. I'm kind of surprised that I like it as much as I do. And I'm like, I don't, I mean, of course, we wouldn't see the silent language, and it would probably be like 2026 before we could probably see anything anyway in a sedan shape. But yeah, but we should move along. So Tesla, any Tesla driver can now join full self-driving beta regardless of safety score. And also on the full self-driving front, I think they've released the, what is it? 11, number 11, the what do you call the edition?
Version 11 software.
Version, thank you, the version 11. But it's only like very few drivers so far that have that. I believe they're just rolling out slowly to, you know, just a select group of beta testers. But now everyone who has paid for the FSD package can get it on their car regardless of their safety score. And I don't know if you have any thoughts about this at all, but I thought we should at least bring that up.
Yeah, but I think it's important to talk a little bit about this because it's a big deal from an earnings standpoint, and I'm not an expert here. I believe Tesla is now able to realize 100% of the FSD earnings that they have captured with this program. So they can, you know, basically if they allowed 50% of the features, then they can only realize 50% of that in their earnings report. So that's a big deal. I don't know all the specifics, but I know that's a big deal. From a user perspective, first of all, there's a lot of people that have been waiting, wanting this system. And a lot of those people will use the system correctly, which is hands on the wheel, always ready to take over and, you know, interacting with the car in the proper way. It also means that there's more people that will be getting this system that aren't nerds into the nitty gritty of how to properly, you know, manage an automated assisted driving system. This is just level two still. And, you know, it gets a little bit scary. For example, Alyssa, she's on a cruise right now in Florida, but she landed in Miami and jumped in the back of a Model 3 Uber that had FSD beta. And she said the guy didn't know his directions. He didn't know how to use navigation in the car properly, but he was using FSD beta. She said it was the sketchiest thing. He said he would let it go all the way to the last moment, then yank the car out of a situation. And it just led for some real sketchy things. So it really comes down to the user, you know, assuming responsibility of this system. I personally think Tesla can really do a lot more to educate their users on what they should and shouldn't do when using this system, regardless as to whether or not you think it's safe or unsafe. There should be more transparency as to the proper use of this and what proper use actually entails. For example, I was driving Neo this past week, and to use Navigate on Pilot, I think they call it, NOP, they make you scan a thing with your phone, go through a checklist. We actually couldn't get it to work, so like it didn't help us at all. But at least there's, okay, some companies are trying, but it wouldn't let us onto that system because we couldn't actually go through their training. Now, whether or not that makes a difference in the real world from studies, I don't know, but I don't think there have been studies on it. So from an earnings standpoint, big news for Tesla. From the true fans that will use it properly, this is a great situation. I'm actually considering buying FSD and putting it on my Model S just to play around with this now that it's available. Maybe I can subscribe to it rather than write the check for 12 or 15 grand or whatever they want for it. I think it's really fun to play around with and to watch the progress unfold. I just worry they're not doing enough to educate the safety of the use.
I agree with Kyle 100%. Both Neo and XPeng make you do the same thing and scan a code and then go through a video. I would take it one step further if it was me. I would make customers sign a document if I was Tesla and mail it in before it gets notified that states that, you know, this is a level two driving system. You have to be ready to take over at all times, because I know people are just not going to, you know, they're going to hear the full self-driving and think, oh, wow, it's enabled now. You know, yeah, I got to kind of watch it, but this thing will be able to do mostly anything. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of this. I mean, I love self-driving, but I don't love giving a system that's at this level and letting just anybody use it, because, you know, it makes a lot of mistakes still. But hey,
we have a post on Inside EVs this week about somebody in the Detroit, Michigan area trying it on public streets in downtown Michigan, and it, you know, the latest edition. That's not 11, but the edition before that. And it does terrible. And it's kind of weird because it's kind of the hallmark of SSD. Some people love it. They say it does, you know, they can go to work and back and not touch, do anything, and it works like perfectly. And then other people, you know, it's trying to kill them constantly.
So I think there needs to be this intermediary ground, which is some people consider a successful, and this is a small portion of the people, but some people say, I was able to go from A to B and I didn't crash and I made it. So that's a successful drive.
Right.
But there's a lot of driving social cues that occur. You know, your behavior can really affect the people around you. The people around you should affect your behavior. And right now, the systems aren't driving in a natural way, or at least the way that would, you know, I guess, communicate a lane change. For example, I know if someone's about to come right out in front of me, if I see them just inch a little bit, you can watch them check their mirror. These things are still coming. So that's why the driver's there to take over. And I just hope, and really just hope, people end up, you know, using the system to see where Tesla's at. Enjoy it. It's fun. It's really cool what it can do. I think it's fascinating. But I'll be taking over at least when other cars are around early, so that it doesn't send the wrong signals. Now, if I'm alone on a back road, I'm like, let's see what this thing will do. As long as I know I can catch it, I'm stupid, right? Maybe I shouldn't have the system, but I like to know where its limits are as a tester. But I feel like I have a good idea as to where I should or shouldn't do these things. I think some people might take it a little bit farther than I would.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting world we're driving into. That's for sure. Self-driving robot cars.
I would just like to have some level of, you know, like what NIO and XPeng has, to really make sure that people understand before this gets enabled in their car, to understand this is a level 2 system, and it is far from being able to handle everything. It's not full self-driving. It's a great name, but this is not full self-driving. I'm certain, like Kyle said, most people are going to be responsible and respectful and know that, but it only takes one person, you know, to kill your mom who's crossing the street, or, you know, run over your brother who's cycling down the road. And, you know, it's, I know those things happen anyway out there, and full self-driving is working towards a safer future. So in that regard, you know, with autonomous driving, level 5 autonomous driving, we should have much safer roads. I'm not against doing this. I just wish it was done a little bit more responsibly. That's my only comment.
True. Right. And there's been a lot of ink spilled in different publications about, you know, it's being dangerous or this and that. Right. But let's move on. Couple of things just to mention. So Pininfarina Battista is now the world's fastest accelerating road legal car. Somehow it was quicker than the Remax Navara, which is the same vehicle underneath but with different tuning. So it's kind of interesting that the Pininfarina people could get that kind of performance out of their car. I'd like to see them both on the track, or I'd like to maybe actually hear from Mate Remats exactly how this is, why somebody else's car is quicker than his, because I think he probably has some words to say about that, or
he'll just tune the Navara maybe a little bit next, and it'll be, you know, 1.72 or something.
I have the feeling that there's an OTA coming for Remats Navara owners, because Navara?
Yeah.
No, there's a bunch. Oh, yeah. They're making
a bunch of owners now.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, they've been making them. They make them slowly, right? But yeah. I believe at least the first one delivered some time ago. So I'm kind of assuming that they've been churning them out. Like, I don't know how many they do, one a week or something. But
one a week would be a pretty good run rate. That's 50 a year. That's pretty good.
Yeah. We need to get Mate on the show somehow.
Yep.
That would be so nice. All right. So that's that. And then Aptera has confirmed that it will use the Tesla charging connector in its upcoming EV.
Big surprise, big news.
Yeah. Right.
No one saw that coming.
Right. But they confirmed it. So I just thought it was worth at least mentioning that, you know, Aptera is officially on the Tesla connector bandwagon. All right. So let's talk about what you're thinking, Kyle. No?
I mean, they need to make a car first.
Right. Right. Yes, they do. They have one more iteration before the production, or they're on, right. They did the last iteration. Then the next one is supposed to be, I believe, the production model. And
yeah, I got running a little bit late with it in its current state. I think it's really cool. I probably will end up buying one. I think it's so cool because it's right up my alley. It's just a weird niche car. But they just need to make one.
Right. So let's talk about what we've been driving this week. I don't know who wants to talk. Maybe we'll start with Tom. Tom, I'm not sure what you were driving this week, if you can even talk about it yet. Can you talk about it yet?
No. You know, I wasn't driving anything specific.
But you did have a... Can I introduce this thing?
What's this?
You did a Autel Maxi Charger EV review.
Oh yeah, of course.
So we could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe the Autel has been showing up on all my channels. I think Out of Spec Dave has an install. Kyle, you have an install on one of your channels?
But you have to know it's a little bit different with me and Out of Spec. So Autel, it's a sponsored thing, right? We don't review charging stations as our core business. So we accepted a sponsor agreement from them. I mean, I like the unit. It's really awesome. Love it. I just can't give a thorough, unbiased review like Tom can. It's the reason we don't accept money from automakers, because we review cars. That's our business. Chargers, you know, they didn't tell me to say one thing or another. I don't even think they know who I am, but they, you know, like the chargers, we installed them. Tom did the actual review.
Yeah, and, so and Tom, like the opposite of Kyle, I will take money if an automaker wants to pay me for something specific, but I won't take money from a charging station company, because that's what I do. You know, I review these this equipment. So, but in any event, so I did the review of the Autel Maxi Charger. It's a really good unit. Comes in 40 amp version and 50 amp versions. The 50 amp versions have to be hardwired. It's got a good NEMA 4 enclosure. It actually comes in a bunch of different varieties, which is interesting. If you notice, I'm unpacking the one here that has the integrated connector holster, and that means that the connector snaps into the unit. But they also sell the same unit with a remote connector holster, and there's not that green ring on the body there. It's just a flush surface, and then you can get a plastic remote connector holster where you can put anywhere you want in your garage. I like that, because a lot of people will mount the body of the unit near their plug or hardwire it, and then you can put the remote connector holster on the wall, say right next to the charge port of your EV. So you just grab it and plug it in. So the remote connector holsters are cool. I mean, it's not bad if it has an integrated connector holster like this. You could just buy a remote connector holster online. The connector holsters fit all the J1772s. It doesn't matter which version of J1772 you have, the remote connector holsters will fit it. I did the full review of it. Some high level, overview, good unit, really easy to mount, pretty solid NEMA 4 enclosure. It's good for outdoor use, even blowing wind and blowing snow and rain. It has a terrible cable. It was probably it's the worst cable we've ever tested. When we do our cold weather, deep freeze, it was like, if anybody knows what a frozen garden hose is like, where you forget to drain your garden hose and you leave it outside below zero, so it's filled with water, and then you try to bend it. I mean, this is me taking it out of the, I don't know if Dom leaves it up enough. Watch as I pull it off. Oh no, wait a minute, Dom. I was showing, that was the ChargePoint Home Flex. I was showing a good cable is supposed to. You see how that, see how bendable that is? This was in a freezer at negative 15 degrees for 24 hours, negative 15 degrees Fahrenheit for 24 hours. Look how nice and bendable that is. If Don can rewind a little bit, we'll take a quick look at what, there's when I pull the Autel out. And I notice I wrap it really tightly around and I tie it up. So watch when I pull this thing out. This thing was terrible. It took the crown. The previous worst cable was the NLX juice box. But this took the crown from the NLX juice box. You see how it's like a spring. Like you
it's amazing.
It was so bad I couldn't hang it on the wall. Watch,
Tom,
I tried
how
to hang
do you
it
think
on the
they
wall.
Got it so wrong?
So the jacket that wraps the wires, it's not all about the thickness of the cable. I just give up and like drop it on the floor. And it's not people. Some people assume, well, if really thick cable is going to be bad. It's not that. It's the outer jacket. You want it to be rubberized. And this was plastic. Look at me. I'm like, I'm not a wimp and I'm having a hard time bending it. I'm like, it was like bending metal. Look, it picks the whole unit up. So, it was fun, but I mean, you know, I'm beating up on it, the cable. A lot of people, if you live in San Diego or Texas or somewhere, this is a non-issue for you. This is if you live in a northern state, particularly if you mount the unit outside. If it's inside your garage, although if it's a detached garage, it's probably going to get ambient temperature. If it's an attached garage like I have here, even if it's like 10 degrees out, the garage is still like 40 or 50 degrees. You really got to get cold. Now watch here. That's one drop. This is no third one. Boom.
Yeah. Boop. Uh-oh.
Well, here's the kit. Can I just comment really quick? Tom, but in the beginning of your review and both in mine, again, I try and be the most unbiased thing, but they sponsored our video, so I had to be nice to it. I didn't personally find anything wrong with it because I don't test them. I loved the handle. I thought it felt super premium, rubberized. You said the same thing at the beginning of the review, and then this happened.
Look what it says, backpedaling ensues. You see on the bottom? And that's because earlier on, I said, oh, this is a great connector. I love how it feels. Look at me. I'm smiling because I'm trying to make excuses for how I just said that it was a good connector. And now I'm like, oh crap, the thing broke. But you know, that's why we do this stuff. And it was unfortunate because it landed right on the worst way it could. It landed on the tab that sticks out. This is a rocker tab that you would find on charging equipment here. See, so this is the tab that locks the connector to the vehicle on this end here. And it's plastic. And this is what broke here, this little loop here that you see. And a metal pin goes through it. And this is how it rocks. So these should be metal. If good, high-quality connectors, these are metal. So that won't happen. Because if a connector is going to break, this is what's going to break. I mean, there's other things that could, but this is the weakest point. And so to make a long story short, it broke. But here's what I found. There's actually a good ending to this. So I reached out to Autel and said, look, I can't continue this review. You either have to send me a new one or I'm going to complete the review and say the thing, you know, I can't use it. But then I took it apart. I actually was able to glue it and fix it and finish the review. So Autel responded like a couple of days later in an email because I was getting frustrated that they weren't responding. And they said, oh, no, we'll just send you a part. So I was like, okay, that's cool. But then I said, well, let me ask you this question. If one of my followers or a customer buys this and it breaks, will you send them the part? I know you want to send me. You want to keep me happy. And they said, absolutely. We will sell this part if it breaks. So now it's great timing, Dom. You brought up Nathan Green. So I had a follower have this break on their ChargePoint HomeFlex. Same exact thing. Weak point broke. ChargePoint will not sell them or ship them this piece. So I called ChargePoint. I know ChargePoint. Well, I said, hey guys, you know, it's a $700 unit. It's useless now. You know, unless, you know, Nathan, you can buy, ChargePoint will sell you the entire cable and the connector. But I think it's $250. Maybe Nathan can tell us what it costs. It's a significant expense. This thing should be $8. So I reached out, followed up with ChargePoint, and they said, Tom, we're very sorry. We don't ship parts. You know, we don't want somebody taking their thing apart and take it apart. It's ridiculous. This pin pushes out of the side of the connector. As a matter of fact, I have a ChargePoint HomeFlex here. You see the hole here, right here? Yeah. That just pushes out. And then this rocker piece here which is, it's basically the same as on the charge point. You know, you can see it there. It just lifts out and then you put a new one in. Why won't they sell this? That's BS, if you ask me. You know, it should be like $6. You shouldn't have to pay for a new cable and a connector. And this is the stuff that I get into the nitty gritty with this. You guys could tell I'm passionate about this. And, you know, the good news is I'm pretty well known in the industry, like the charging station manufacturers. That's why they all send me them. I have, God, I'm getting close to 70 of these in my garage now. A bunch of them are in boxes because they just ship them out to me and say, please review this when you get a chance. Some of them offer to pay me. And I say, no, I'm not going to take your money. But this isn't the first time. So after the review comes out, by the way, the Autel finished up with 4.4 stars out of 5. Very good score. And part of that is I also, the cost of the unit weighs heavily in my ratings, because I don't think we should have to pay $700-$800 for these units. And the Autel, right, the 40 amp Autel's $549. There aren't many 40 amp, you know, smart chargers that come with an app that you can view, monitor your thing, that are NEMA 4 rated, that have a 25 foot long cable for $549. So it's priced pretty well. And God, now I lost my train of thought. It ended up with a 4.4 out of 5 things. So God, where was I going with this, Tom? You got to help me here. I talked about the fact that they'll sell you this. Right. So Autel, now the review's over and it's up. And Autel reaches out to me and says, look, the entire company has watched your thing, you know, in multi countries and everything. So we appreciate the things that you've said. You know, we're a little disappointed that the cable was so bad. We are taking your recommendations and we're going to consider sourcing a new cable and improving the connector so it doesn't break as easily. So that's my goal. I really want to push these companies to make better products. And that's why I do these reviews. I mean, I do it for clicks too. Don't get me wrong, but the guys know that I'm, you know, a lot of what I do here is educational and to try to move the needle more so than get, you know, a million clicks and be the most popular YouTuber that there is. Of course, I want more subscribers and all this stuff and everything. But if that was my main goal, I would be going about things a different way. I'd be following Kyle's path because this guy's rocking it now and he's just growing like crazy and all that stuff. But, you know, so this is it's important to me to try to show my followers and the people all these little things that make a difference and then subsequently have the makers make better products. So that's where we're at. And oh, and by the way, in about 40 minutes, my next EVSC review is coming up of this guy over here. It's the J Plus Booster 2, which is known in Europe as the Juice Booster 2. And Kyle Juice probably boosters. Has it. Kyle, yours probably say Juice Booster on them, right?
Yeah, I got a whole bunch J+ of like the Euro versions adapted for America.
The Euro versions say Juice Booster 2, but when they brought it to the US, I think they were concerned that it would be confused with the NLX juice box. Either that or NLX sent them a cease and desist. I don't know what you know, like the juice name they might have trademarked and all this stuff. So it's called the J Plus Booster 2. It's a dual voltage, super tough, portable unit. It's expensive. That's the only problem. It's $700. But if you really want one, today, Black Friday, it's 20% off. It's $549. That's at $549 or $559, something like that. It's a great unit for $559. If anybody out there, and I have a lot of people always ask me, Tom, I want a dual voltage portable unit so I can take with me, plug into the NEMA 1450 or a NEMA 515. This might be the guy that you want because it is tough. And you'll see in my review, I put it in a bucket of water and submerge it for 2 hours. And it's only rated to do it for 30 minutes. I was kind of hoping it would fail. But anyway, it held up for 2 hours. I drove over it with both my Lightning and my Rivian, which are heavy vehicles, 6,600 pounds, 7,200 pounds. I froze it. I did the connector, the cable deep test, the connector drop test, disconnected it and break. So this thing is tough as nails. And it's actually charging my R1T right now because I'm about to drive up to Vermont right after the podcast.
So I have the Pro version, which I don't think they sell in America, but essentially you can swap on J1772, GBT, or Euro Type 2. So I can change that end and the plug end. So I have a bunch of these for sometimes we drive prototype vehicles that don't have American charging ports on them, or we're in Europe and we're driving Chinese cars. Like I just, these things are, they let us do our job. It's really amazing. But I actually did some work for them early on. Really like the company, great people based in Switzerland. And I got to tell you, we've been in the middle of Northern Montana where they didn't have internet, relying on these things to charge up motorcycles, our zeros on this big trip that we took. Incredible units, super, super hard wearing. And yeah, can't recommend them enough. Just as a user, I'm a fan.
Brandon asked J Plus, or said J Plus needs to come out with more adapters. Which particular adapter are you looking for? Because it does have 8 different adapters for the US market. So, yeah, it's the two that come with it are NEMA 1450 and NEMA 515. And then there's 6 additional adapters that you could purchase. I don't know exactly which configurations, but I know it has 8 adapters for the US market, Brandon.
Okay. So maybe that's what he's looking for there. And maybe just wasn't aware of that. All right. So Kyle, let's talk about Alyssa's sister's ID4, Volkswagen ID4. Just before the show, you were saying that you want to mention, talk about this a little bit. She's having some issues.
Yeah, so Michaela bought a 2023 Volkswagen ID4 built in Chattanooga, and we produced a whole video on this. And she's just a very normal young professional. She's a nurse and, like, you know, just needed a car. So this is what she bought. And honestly, she didn't even really, like, we weren't that involved. She had just watched our videos on it. She knew we'd been driving it. Her mom owns one as well. And honestly, it's the perfect car. It's working out really well for her. But the one thing I just wanted to point out was Volkswagen still isn't past their software bugs and issues. She's on software 3.1. It's a US built car. It's got all the stuff. As soon as we took delivery, it had parking sensor issues. It had an airbag sensor issue and a whole bunch of weird stuff. So it's going to go in for service. I'm sure it'll be fine, but it just doesn't bode well for these. Now, this is one of the first ones off the line in Chattanooga. Colton, who does our detailing channel, is actually going to buy one as well. Just based off of the tax credits here in Colorado and federal, you get on the US cars till the end of the year. It kind of, like, financially makes sense to just go and get one, in my opinion. So Colton's going to get the identical car to Michaela's, is at least the plan. I think they have one more available at our local dealer. So he's going to go over there and maybe pick it up today, and we'll see if that has issues. But definitely, like, the cars are great. I had an ID4 as an Uber yesterday in Oslo. I just flew in last night, and the guy, it was just a normal car to him. He, like, didn't know too much about it, but he's like, I just charge it home and Uber during the day, and it's perfect, and no issues for him. So just still software bugs on these things, and I think that's going to plague Volkswagen still for years to come.
I just pulled up this article just to kind of show the car a little bit, and they are selling a fair amount of them. This article that we
published. Well, it's such a good car. And for the price, especially with, like, right now, the last couple months of the year where it's a U.S. built car, it should get the full tax credit plus your state incentives. You get 3 years of 30-minute charging on EA. Like, it just kind of is like, yeah, you should probably just go get one of these. It's really a wonderful car. But at least on Michaela's, it's got to go in to service for something. We're not sure exactly what's wrong with it, but it's got some bugs.
All right. And you were just mentioning that you were in Scandinavia, Norway recently, and I think it's Sweden as well, right?
Yeah, we did Norway, Finland, and Sweden.
Okay. Oh, Finland. I didn't realize you were there.
Let me ask you a question, Dom.
Sorry.
Real quick. So Brandon said he only got the 515 and the 1450. Brandon, yeah, that's all that comes with it. You have to buy the other adapters if you want them. And then John, yes, you can hardwire. You can order it. The 50-amp version only comes to be hardwired, but the 40-amp version, it would be really simple to take it apart, just remove the 3 wires and hardwire it from there. Pretty much any, like, wall-mounted EVSC that has a plug can be converted to hardwired. It's it's real simple procedure on pretty much all of them that I've taken, because I always open them up and look inside, and you know, any electrician could do it. You know, I don't recommend people do it on their own, but that's your call.
So getting back to your trip, Kyle, you were saying you drove some different Chinese cars and things. So I know you drove the Nio, but you also drove the Voya Free. What is that?
Yeah, the Voya Free, super interesting car that no one's really ever heard of, at least on our shores. They've sold over 10,000 of them in China, so it's pretty popular over there, or at least getting to be. It's made by Dongfeng Motors, I think is what it's called. But basically, that's a huge car automaker conglomerate. And this is their luxury brand. So it's their top brand, at least in Europe, only battery electric, dual motor, 100 kilowatt hour usable battery pack, 106 gross. And it's really like an e-tron competitor. You get so much kit for the price. It's about 70,000 US dollars equivalent. It's like 700,000 krona, but it comes with everything: night vision, massaging seats, you know, good driver assistance, a dashboard that moves up and down. It's crazy. So I actually really liked it. I thought it was pretty comfortable, as most Chinese cars are. They're basically, what's interesting is doing an entire European software package different than the Chinese cars software package. I made a quick video on it. It's not something we should spend a lot of time on, but okay. They have 500 of them arriving in Europe. They're actually already there at the port, and they'll be delivered as soon as this week, starting in Norway. So I'm sure we'll start to see them out on the roads there. I did see a few test cars driving around Norway, you know, ahead of market launch, just making sure everything worked.
Right. I couldn't find an actual picture of it. I just found that like concept from a couple of years ago, but look into it.
Not a bad looking car, very high quality materials, built really well. I actually thought it was nicer than the Nio ES8. It's certainly more expensive. It seems like it's worth the money. It's not as solid as an e-tron, but it's also less than an e-tron. An equivalently priced e-tron would have the small battery and not that much kit. This is like, you know, I think you're taking a leap of faith going with a brand new Chinese automaker there, but they said they've already sold the first batch of 500. So I guess people are willing to do it.
All right. Well, on the subject of Chinese automakers, you also took a tour of the Nio house in Oslo. And it's a full tour of how this Chinese EV company is presenting itself to Norway. So yeah, we've seen this a lot. Like we've seen it in China, the Nio houses, and we've seen other brands do similar things where they're trying to, make a whole lifestyle sort of situation around their brand. I don't know, what were your impressions of the store?
Well, even beyond the store, I think I have some just left with an impression. It was my first Nio experience. Tom's driven Nio. He knows their company. It was my first time interacting with the cars, interacting with the people working there, seeing a battery swap station, which I think is more important than the Nio house. But ultimately, I've kind of turned into a Nio fan. Like, I really think the cars drive very nicely. They're very high quality cars. The lifestyle aspect of it's pretty exciting because you get to earn points by going to events. Like, it tries to keep you in the Nio ecosystem. I kind of like that. And this Nio house has to be the most expensive piece of real estate in Oslo. I mean, they just came in, told the world, here's what's going on, drop a bucket of money on this place. And it's insane. I mean, just next level architecture. Everything's totally planned out to celebrate Norway. The building is shaped like waves. It's really, really cool. The cars, especially the ET7, is a really high quality car. I'm excited for ET5. I think we'll actually see an ET5 wagon coming, which they were alluding to. That's going to be extremely exciting because then you can get 150 kilowatt hour wagon. That seems like the ultimate car to me. So I'm really, really into this. The Nio house is cool. If you're in Oslo, you have to go. I drove the Nio ES8, which I didn't like as much. The Nio ES8 felt old. I mean, it launched in 2019, was it? 2018, 2019?
It's very been a while, little
updates to the car. Just launched in 2022 in Norway. It's not the one I would go for. I would absolutely buy a iX or e-tron or something over the ES8. I really just think, you know, from a material standpoint, from noise, from driving dynamics, it's a step behind the other competition. But these new cars are really top of the line, really good stuff. But I took the Nio ES8 to a battery swap station, which in my experience was really cool. I actually like the idea. It's kind of nice Now, I'm not sure if this would ever work in America. I don't know if they have plans to come to do battery swaps here when they launch. I don't know. But it's kind of nice to not care about your battery pack. I spend a lot of time making sure the cars are charged properly, that they're not left full or dead. They're always kind of in the middle. And it occupies quite a bit of my brain power. If I didn't own the battery or care about it and I subscribe to it, then I can do whatever I want with that thing. And I can just go right by a battery swap station and literally in 6 minutes leave with a 90% charge with a different battery that I also don't have to care about. They're going heavy. I think there's 1,200 battery swap stations in China right now. I think their plan is for 1,500. They have four in Norway at the moment. Three are operational. The fourth is about to go online next month or the month after. Sweden just opened up their first. Germany has them now. And at least while the travel numbers of NIOs are low, it works. As soon as you start having like one car or two cars in line, at that point, you may as well just be charging. And that's when I think the whole battery swap thing starts to fall apart. But at least while there's like none of them on the road, they only sold 1,000 so far in Europe, is my understanding. You just roll up to any battery swap station. They got 12 fully charged batteries waiting to go into your car. You're good to go. I thought it was a really cool process. Actually, that video will be live today is the plan.
Oh, sweet. Something to look forward to. All right.
Let me ask you a quick question about the NIO house. Could anybody walk in it, or did you have to have a key to get into that area?
No, the whole building was fully open for anyone. And we just saw members of the public as well. Like we went twice. We went one time when it was kind of busy, and then we went back again when they're like, hey, no one's going to be here during these hours. It's pretty low. So we went to film during a low time, but totally open to anyone in the city, just normal people going to hang out, getting work done. We saw college kids working in that area. It was pretty cool.
So the interesting thing is, I don't think that's their long-term plan. Like in China, the NIO houses, many of them are located like, well, at least the ones that I went to, they're located above NIO showrooms. So let's say you go into, it's in a shopping mall or something, there's a beautiful NIO showroom, and then there's a staircase over to the side. And in order to go up the staircase, you take your NIO key, like it's a key card, and swipe it. Only NIO owners are allowed to go up into the NIO house. And there's a coffee bar. There's a place for the kids to play. It was a really cool place. So I think this open to the public concept, I don't like that if I'm a NIO owner. I want to buy into exclusivity. I want to go to this place where I can have a coffee and not have, the common folk sitting next to me.
I think that is their plan, to do spaces like that around Europe. This one is like you can't even drive to it.
Yeah.
You have to like park on the outskirts and walk in type situation.
It was so, like an airport lounge for me. Like, you have to have the business class ticket to go into the NIO house.
Sure, sure. And this was wide open. This is much more like Rivian's approach with their hubs, which is like part of the community. Anyone can come. Now, they have coffee and drinks and stuff. You got to pay for them.
Yeah. This was all complimentary in China.
Different vibe. Perhaps this will turn into that. I don't really see them needing to run this NIO house for more than a couple years. Mm-hmm. I think it's more of a showcase. Hey, we're in Norway. This is what we can do. And then they'll bail once.
Help establish the brand, basically.
Yeah. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool. I'm just concerned about the capital intensity. The way NIO's battery swap system is, how capital intense that is, how many battery packs they have to have out there that aren't in cars being used. And even these NIO centers, like Kyle mentioned, state of the art, gorgeous, the NIO houses, those cost a crap load of money to build out and to pay leases and everything. Like, NIO's not selling enough cars to sustain this right now. They must be burning cash like all hell. I mean, I'm not a financial guy. I don't look at what they're doing, but I look at the investment they're making in these battery swaps and these NIO houses and everything. And holy cow, like, at some point the accountants are going to be like, hey, you got to start selling more cars or we're not going to be able to pay the bills.
Yeah, that point must be coming. And I would think sooner rather than later. I'm not an investor as well, Tom. I don't know how this works. But if I was an investor, I'd be like, maybe you shouldn't spend this much money on this house. Like, this is like, I don't even know if Apple would go as big as NIO went here in Oslo. It's pretty crazy. But have to say, I like the cars. I like the people who work there. Everyone we met who, like, we didn't like arrange a lot of this stuff ahead of time. Me, I just kind of show up and then start blasting off emails to PR people like, hey, we need a car now. It's not always the best plan, but like, they were like, oh, we love the channel. We'll do everything we can to make it, you know, get you cars, do whatever you need to do. Battery swap didn't work with the ET7. They got us an ES8. We got to do it again. And that was just because that car wasn't enrolled in the subscription to do battery swap. I mean, cool people, cool product. You know, I think they would do really well in America if they came here, my opinion.
Oh, I thought the vehicles were fantastic. And I drove a DS8 when it first came out. And to me, I was shocked because of the level of quality. At the time, like, you know, back 2018, I think it was, or late 2018 or early 2019, I figured exactly what it was. This is going back years now that
That's
I drove
early,
it.
Yeah.
I was surprised because I was still at that point concerned or questioned whether Chinese made cars were going to be able to match the quality of American and European brands. Because up to that point, let's face it, they hadn't been. They were garbage. That's why China never really went globally. No Chinese car company was a global brand because they couldn't match the quality. And driving it, I was like, wow, this thing is solid. It's quiet. Like, I was really impressed with it. And but they're positioning themselves as a premium brand, you know, as opposed to XPeng, who's more of like a Chevrolet, you know. And one of the interesting thing, it didn't XPeng was very proud of the fact of how much money the company spent per vehicle sold. And when I went over there with XPeng and talked, they had a whole thing comparing themselves to NIO. And they were like, for each car we've sold, we've spent, you know, $55,000. I forget what the number was. And like NIO, like, had spent like eight times what XPeng sent per vehicle sold. And they pointed to this, to the battery swap investment, to the NIO house. They're like, you know,
Formula E sponsorships.
Yeah. And, you know, so XPeng was like talking about how like they have a more sustainable business plan and everything. And, you know, I'm not saying one's better than the other, but, you know, it's interesting that these two companies have completely different approaches to how they're going to be global. And both brands want to be global brands. And I think they're both going to be global brands.
Right.
Yeah. And BYD for sure is, we've been seeing their test cars in America now. Yep. I've received communications from BYD saying like, hey, we have cars you can review in America, but we need you to sign this NDA. And I'm like, nope, that's not how this works. We are not signing any NDAs to review your cars. So we're just like, you know, I don't know what we're going to do about that. But
yeah, the working
with the Chinese is really a pain in the ass.
I was just going to say this. They are not used to dealing with like Western journalists and they try to control what you're doing. When I was over there with NIO, they had just introduced one of their new cars. I forget what it was, but it was a prototype at the time. It wasn't even introduced yet. God, which one was it? I forget. In any event, I was standing in front of it and I was making like my own video, and they're like, could we record you standing in front of the car? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know? And so they're like, say it's better than Tesla. And I'm like, what? They're like, just say this car is better than Tesla. like no, you know, I haven't driven it. And they're like, oh, well, maybe you could say it's as good as Tesla. You know, I'm like, okay, this isn't going to work. You can't record me, you know, but they really like, you know, want you, they push as far as they can to try to get stuff out of, whereas the European and American companies, they wouldn't say anything like that, you know? So no, I thought that was interesting.
And yeah, I mean, during this trip, we reviewed a couple of those Chinese cars and we didn't experience anything like that. But just the emails back and forth to arrange a lot of this stuff is just like, we just are so hardcore. I'm just like, you just give us the car. You have no control over what we're going to do with it. And thanks again for the loan. And they end up caving and giving us the cars. Or we're like, we have 9 viewers who own NIO ES8s who are willing to let us borrow it when we're in Norway. So I'm like, do you want to give us your car or do you want us to borrow theirs?
Right. So we're going to wind up the show here pretty quickly. I'm not sure if there's anything else in particular you want to talk about, Kyle, but you put this video up on your, is it, I'm not sure which channel
it's
this
on
is
the
on
reviews
actually.
Channel. Yep.
It's out of spec reviews.
Yep.
Okay. So this is just, I guess you driving around and doing some car spotting in Norway, which has like ton of electric cars, like on the road all the time. It's like electric car enthusiasts, nirvana, I guess.
Yeah, so many Hongqis you see out there. We saw a bunch of stuff. I really like this Hongqi HS9. I think you have to be a special type of person to drive this car because it's a bit shitty.
You're a special person.
But I could never drive it. But I would love to drive it for like a week and just see what it's like. But they're everywhere around Norway now. But basically, we just drove around counting electric cars, looking at them, and it's insane. I mean, it'll just blow your mind as to how many electric cars are around.
What's that car right in front of you there?
That's a Niro electric and then a Leaf on the right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I recognize the Leaf. I wasn't sure of the Niro. Yeah, when you say Niro, yeah. I was thinking it looks like a Chevy Bolt a little bit, but yeah.
They have a lot of Ampera-Es around.
Sorry?
They have a lot of Ampera-Es, which is a Bolt.
Right. Yep. I just wonder if there's – you have a Hongqi on here somewhere that I could –
I don't think it could, there are in this video, but I don't know where we would find it and pinpoint to. Just lots of stuff around.
It's 27 minutes and it looks like a blast to kind of just get a feel of what it's like to be in Norway on Norway roads and stuff. So
it's just gray and slow. People drive so slow in Norway, which also helps with the EV thing, right? Because you're not really burning that much juice. But the highest speed you can travel is 110 kph, and it's only for a small section. 99% of the country is 80 kilometers per hour or 60 kilometers per hour. And I mean, we drove all
That's
the way
really
up
to good for EVs, but man,
and it took forever. I mean, it took like 3 days to travel in America. We can do it in like 8 hours. I mean, it was pretty crazy.
That's funny.
Right.
Tom, one thing want to point out, I know we're going to be leaving soon. One of the commenters commented on, can you guys comment on Sandy Munro's video that he recently put out about the failed plugs and so forth? I'm actually making sort of a response video to that. And that's going to be up in about 2 weeks on State of Charge, where I have an electrician who's actually a specialist. All this company does is electric vehicle charging equipment, basically installing it. And we're sitting at a table, kind of like what Sandy did, and we're going to talk about it. And a lot of what Sandy brought up in that video is true. And I'm not saying any of it's false, but a lot of it is absolutely 100% correct. And we're starting to see now that electric vehicles are getting more and more prominent, we're seeing failures in connections. So I had at least 20 of my followers message me saying, Tom, am I in danger of my house? Is there a problem? And that what it did was it made me feel like as true as what Sandy's video was and as correct as what it was, I think it also might have been a little like scaring people, you know, and you should be scared about doing things properly. But what I really want to do is explain why you shouldn't worry about this. If it's done correctly and you use the right equipment and you use the right professionals to install it. So we're gonna do a video and talk about that. And even if you do everything right, you could have a problem. But if it's done correctly, even if there's a problem, it won't be a catastrophic problem. Like Kyle had a failure on at his house, and it wasn't catastrophic because it was in the proper box and the wires melted, but there was no fire or anything. But we are seeing people do things on their own and not to code and completely unsafe. I get pictures of people sending me like what they installed and saying, Tom, did I do this right? And I'm like, oh God, like, I'm sorry. I love the followers and everything, but I'm not going to give you electrical advice because I don't think you should be doing this. You know, if you were installing a regular 110 outlet that you're going to plug a lamp in, I'd be a little bit more, you know, amenable to say, okay, you know, you do it this way. But this stuff here pulls more current than what the rest of your house is using. And it does it every day for many continuous hours. And that wreaks havoc on connections and stuff. So you got to have a pro do it, even though you're going to spend a couple $100 more. But any event, we'll talk about that. I just wanted to point out the fact that I'm going to be producing a nice video and we're going to explain all this stuff and what you why you should be concerned, but why you shouldn't let it deter you from buying an EV.
You know, Tom, I just want to bring up that point. In Norway, I've found out about some regulation, which I've never heard of. And it really has affected, I would say, the EV owner base in Norway. For years, people have just plugged into regular wall outlets, Schüco plugs. They're 3.2 kilowatts, something like that. Yeah. More than enough to charge up almost every car overnight, for the driving they do in that country. It's almost like they didn't even need to install any infrastructure. However, it's illegal to leave your car charging on a wall outlet without visually monitoring it the entire time in Norway. They use the same plugs in Germany, and you can just leave it plugged in. It's no big deal. But in Norway, they outlawed it, which is crazy. So there's actually a few legacy charging stations that are just the Schüco plugs. Those, I think, are grandfathered in since they were designed to be charging units. But every new house, you can't plug your car into the wall. You can't plug your car into the wall in a showroom unless you're there monitoring it. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it has a consistent draw of a lot of power. And, you know, that's what overheats wires, connections. And like, you know, it's not once in a while. You do it every day. So right. Even if you're going to charge level one here in the U.S. on a 120-volt outlet, I always recommend people have an electrician run a brand new circuit with new wires. Let him know you're going to be using this every day. He'll crank down the connections to higher torque. It'll be a brand new, you know, run. It won't cost that much money. And you're good to go. Some of these outlets in garages, people never use. The house was built 20, 30 years ago, and they almost never use their outlet in the garage, or once or twice a year. And now all of a sudden, you're using it every day for 12 hours, pulling, you know, the maximum current that it's rated to pull. Of course, you're going to see these outlets melt and brown out and everything. So, you know, I mean, you know, you spend so much money on a new EV, just spend a couple $100 more and do the charging right, please. All right, end of rant. I want to hear about any update on Dom's Bolt, and then I'm bolting because I'm driving 250 miles up to Vermont now for the holiday.
So I think the plan is right now to get in January so I can take advantage of at least half of the IRA incentive, because I'm waiting to hear back from GM, from the government about the whole mineral sourcing thing, what the eligibility, if it's eligible. I just don't know if it's going to be eligible for the whole amount next year.
Dom, here's what I'd recommend. Lock in a price with a dealer on an in-stock unit the last week of December if you're doing right. that. Because what you don't want to have happen is GM say January 1, hey, tax credits are back. We're raising the price $8,000. So get it in writing. Your sale price without any credits is X plus any additional incentives that might apply to that car. If you can find a dealer to agree to that and do the sale, it's going to be tough because they're going to want to push that car out by the end of the month, the end of the year to count right. towards their numbers. I don't 100%. Know if any dealer will go for it, but if you can find one, that would be the move.
Right. That's good advice, I think, and definitely worth it. I definitely will be looking at that, doing that. I don't think that GM's going to raise the prices. We just put an article out on Inside EVs, addressing that issue. Actually, it's our headlining story right now. So GM vows to avoid opportunistic EV prices, plays a long game, which, you know, I don't know. I think GM has kind of got it right. They're a little slow out of the gate, but I think they've kind of laid the foundation for a good program with good cost savings where they can sell it, offer at good prices and not have to keep jacking things up. And it's a good thing because the market is not going to handle like the high prices. Things are really slowing down with the raising of the interest rates around. The used car market's changed substantially just over the last like month and a half. Prices are coming down. The market adjustments on cars, I have a feeling, I haven't looked at it deeply to make sure, but I have the feeling at least that they're disappearing. I don't know.
Unless it's like a G-Wagon or, you know, a 911 or something like that, that's in short supply. You can walk in and buy ID4, Ioniq 5 at sticker. Now, to get it delivered by end of year, that's still the challenge. There's still an inventory challenge on new electric vehicles. So that's going to be the problem going forwards.
Right. So short supply always means, you know, higher prices. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. But that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney at Tomolog. That's just two M's. Martin Lee, even when he's not here with us, he's at EV News Daily. And Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao. That's my cue to actually
gotta end the show.
End the show and hit that little what's that thing.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a 1-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.